Hey, welcome to the UCB Log Form Conversation.
What is happening?
Hey, everybody. Improv Tuesday.
You better buckle up for the Drive-In Improv Podcast.
Yeah.
100 million viewers and listeners.
It's Long Form Johnny and the Tag Out coming to you.
Slap. Oh, and there's Beaver Man. That was your weekend, Beaver Man. It's always a wild party with Beaver Man in the copter watching improv from way too high.
Give us the traffic on that back line, Beaver Man.
The bit's already too hard to map. Laura Wilcox is our guest today. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
How are you, Laura?
I'm great. How are you guys?
I'm good, thank you.
Yeah, we're all right. This is John Frusciante, everybody. That's guy I'm looking. He's the co-host.
Yeah, and this is Will Hines that I'm looking at. He's also the co-host.
And Laura's our guest. And there's a siren outside.
Yeah.
We're in the
that's our siren.
Classroom at the UCB Training Center that's facing the street. So this is a frequent noise in New York improv classrooms,
yeah.
I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
This is my.
But it doesn't help that we're. Oh, go ahead.
This is what my apartment sounds like. I'm in like a street facing apartment.
And oh, yeah.
The car alarm goes off every single day.
But doesn't that just remind you that you're in New York in sort of a real stereotypical 70s sitcom way?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It wears. It
gets old, yeah.
Yeah. It gets old.
It doesn't help that we're right across the street from a police station.
No. Doesn't help anything. Although it does remind people that they should obey the rules.
That's true. That's true. And serves as a wonderful metaphor for teaching game.
Right, because it's a police station that's in a castle.
Right, yeah, it looks like a castle.
What's up, Sypho?
No, there's a guy in the window, and when he had his head turned, he looked like Kevin Hines.
Oh, yeah. On the balcony there?
Like
the balcony?
Right,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
he's
yeah.
He's on the turret.
That's Sypho Sounds, the podcast intern. And off mic, we have Keaton Patty and Semra. I don't know Semra's last name.
Semra, she's just Semra.
She's just Semra.
Just mm-hmm. Semra. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good name, damn.
Will Hines and I have put our differences aside to be together on this podcast.
That's right. It's been 3 weeks since we've done one together.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah.
But there is a police station that's in a castle.
Yeah, it's like a castle.
Yeah, right across the street. And then it's weird. But we all get acclimated to it and we forget that that's like a strange thing.
Right.
Until you see a man that looks like Kevin Hines standing on a turret.
Right. That's right. There is a turret and there's a guy in the police precinct who wandered out and looks just like my brother, Kevin Hines.
Yeah.
Who kind of slumped out and deadpanly regarded the street and then walked back in.
Seeing a man in plaid on a castle turret is just
strange.
That's already weird.
But it is a great, like, that's in our curriculum to talk about this, or it's suggested.
It's offered
just reading
as an example.
Yeah, I love it. It's one of my favorite things.
That's an Ari Vukitis special.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that.
If it's true, then what else is true?
That'd be the morning jam sound effect.
If that's true, what else is true?
Top your intelligence. On the hour. Right?
Right. That's it.
I guess.
That's it. So the podcast has been bought by a major media conglomerate, and we have to convert to morning zoo style.
Clear Channel.
Yeah, Clear Channel. So, Laura Wilcox, thank you for...
Is that a real... Somebody's made a sound.
It's some kind of off-mic doorbell.
Okay.
This podcast is off to a great start.
Yeah, everyone's still listening.
I've gotten suggestions from a couple people that it's like, I wish you'd get to the guest faster because people see the... Laura, they'll see the name that
is that
episode.
Okay.
A couple people, and they're like, I'd love to get to that person right away rather than this sort of Mark Maron-esque...
Uh-huh.
Delay where we do this part, but then other people are like, "What are you gonna say? Too bad."
I'm just saying, "Too bad."
Yeah, you gotta wait.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I like the kind of lead in a little bit. Not a 30-minute WTF.
What's going on with my relationships?
Kind of, thing. Yeah.
Although we love WTF, of course.
Of course,
everyone does.
Who doesn't?
Nobody doesn't.
Nobody doesn't love it.
Right. But you know, hey, look. There are a million fucking podcasts. You know?
Sure.
You don't like this one? Go listen to some other improv podcast.
That's right.
Well,
right?
Except stay here and listen. Right?
Except, don't maybe go away and we like you.
Yeah, please stay here and we love you and tell your friends to listen to this podcast. So anyway,
Laura Wilcox.
You are an improviser and an actor and a writer.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in that order, but we...
Any order is fine.
That's right. Okay, that's good. That's good to know. You are currently on the Harold team, Bucky.
Right.
Correct.
Yes.
And before that, we talked about this.
Yes.
We did a little pre-interview right before this.
Right.
Give us that. Just give us the quick bullet point, sort of like UCB rundown for Laura Wilcox.
So just the UCB teams?
And the indie teams too,
The indie teams? Okay. Well, my first indie team was Boys Club for Men.
Yep. And great team.
Great team. Great name. Got a scoff from Cypher.
Yeah.
And that's what we were going for.
Cypher's got a high standard for names.
Yeah.
He's a snob about it.
So yeah, Boys Club for Men. That was my first indie team. That was Sean Diston was on that. Lauren Lapkus was on that. We met in like and Jason Curtis, Nick Vatterott.
That's an all star.
Too busy doing stand up now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Nick Faber, who lives in North Carolina now.
It's an awesome lineup. RIP. Great team.
Yeah.
Yeah. We met in Sean and Jason Curtis and I met in a 301 with your brother, who's
Kevin Hines, who's out in the police station in the turret. Yes.
Yeah. And then we met Lauren in Porter Mason's 401, which was also the 401 where Porter met his wife.
Uh-oh.
We can cut that if that's scandalous, but, you know, they're happy.
Yeah.
And we were like, well, she's amazing. Let's form a team. And we did.
Lapkus was a superstar, like, right away. I think my brother taught her 201 and after, like, three sessions recommended her for a Herald team.
Yes.
Wow. She, like, walked to Anthony King and was like, you should put her on a Herald team. I know you can't do that, but we're teaching her nothing. She's good enough to be in a team right now.
Because she'd been on Herald teams in Chicago for 6 years.
And that.
Because she was smart and started young.
That's right. Not like us.
Idiots.
Jerks. Mm-hmm. All jerks all around.
Yep.
So yeah.
That was your first indie team.
That was my first indie team. And we did. We had like monthly shows at the Creek.
Monday nights, I think.
Yeah,
right?
I think
after
so.
Kaleidoscope.
Yeah, after the Kaleidoscope.
Yeah.
Wow, you remember better than I do.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And that was fun. Our shows were always like really weird and they would like go weird places and the task was just to like stay on board and not let it devolve, but
that worked. It was fun.
Yeah, right. It was really fun.
Yeah.
Is that the kind of stuff that you tend to be drawn to? Or did it just happen as a result of the chemistry?
Yeah, that was just sort of the result of the chemistry. I kind of like character, like my top preference is like more character relationship based.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
I was a psych major, and I get to use it.
Okay.
No, I don't know. I think that's just my personality. That's just like what's interesting.
It's
to
fun.
Me.
You start as a person.
Yeah.
You explore that person, and then you find the game from that. It's a what's wrong with that, John Frusciante?
Anything's wrong with it. Jeez, right. I'm just asking questions here.
You know what?
You
I don't think we should do podcasts together.
All right. Well, here we go again.
Well, let's talk about it.
Sure. Well, I think I see Will as my dad.
Shut up!
And then Lauren and I started doing Tuprov together, and I feel like that was because I had this benefit of like playing with someone. She and I became friends, very good friends, but then I also benefited a lot from playing with someone who was like much, much better than I was. And luckily for me, she just like had no friends in New York. So we were like, do you want to be on our indie team? This is our first 301. She was like, yes. And we were like, okay, great. We thought you'd say no.
Yeah, because she's like this Chicago superstar.
Yeah.
That just because she's in a place where people don't know who she is yet, you grabbed her.
Right.
But everyone on that team was great. I mean, Vatterott also was a huge improv veteran. Everyone of that. And Diston and you. It was just a great team.
It was a fun team.
I don't like you putting yourself down, Wilcox, but Lapkus is special for sure.
She is special. But I had also just started.
You guys were a good compliment, though, I felt like, because she, and I don't mean this in a bad way, because she's so hilarious, but I think because she's so effortlessly silly, she can be nuts and kind of like lose track. And you were sort of like, it was one of those like you could be the bass player when she was doing that.
Yeah.
Although you're also... You can be a little wackadoodle in a great way.
Silly.
What's wrong
like
with that?
Silly. Mm-hmm. Doing two
Lapkus shows were great.
Thank you. That was the first improv show I ever did where I left and was like, that was a good show. was a Tuprov set that I did with her at school night.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, 7 minutes, three scenes, but it was so fun and easy and like, I feel like we just kind of matched each other and just had like three silly yet grounded scenes that were all kind of like character based. And that was like I still remember like that euphoric adrenaline rush of like a show where I was like, I can say with confidence that was a good show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She and I are doing a show together this Friday, Gentrify, hopefully.
Oh, nice.
She's back
that's great.
In town. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. That'll have already happened by the time it airs, right? So.
Yes.
That will, that's in the past.
Whoops.
Nope. That's a little looper logic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, those good shows, a good scene in class, a good show somewhere, like it does just make everything feel easier. It gives you confidence. Right. I think it's good to burn it into your memory.
Yeah,
because you feel like you get it. You feel like, oh, I'm doing it right.
Yeah.
Or like, this is fun and I'm on the right track.
You know? I mean, sometimes, I mean, I just remember, the scenes I liked that I did years ago just because it was like, oh, maybe I'm not terrible. Maybe like this can work.
Yeah.
It gives you just that little bit of confidence you need. And then also, something I got from, like, again, playing with people who I was like, you're much better than I am. I would just try to mimic their confidence on stage because I didn't have any of my own.
But just
I was
assume
like,
their posture.
I just didn't want to stand out as like the unconfident one on stage. So I would just like pretend I was as comfortable as they seemed. And it's like you fake it till you make it. I actually think it worked. Like it's at some point translated into actual confidence.
I think that's absolutely true. I think that's absolutely what happens. I think it's a very valuable skill to be able to do that if you can do it
if you can fake it.
Because you like you said, fake it till you make it. Eventually, from doing that, you just sort of become it.
Right.
In the same way that if you keep telling yourself you're shitty at something, you will definitely be shitty. Or if you keep telling yourself, I'm going to fail at this, you will fail at it.
But you must, I mean, I had that same feeling when I did stuff that I felt like I was lucky to play with people better than me. Yeah. But they wouldn't play with you if they didn't think you were good.
Yeah, I mean.
You know, like.
No, I mean, I'm not saying, I wasn't like.
Lapkus wasn't a. Right. Charity case.
No. Mm-hmm.
Lauren Lapkus could give a shit about other people. Quote me on that.
I will.
She's a goddamn Machiavellian destroyer.
She's a saint. Mm-hmm. She's a saint.
No, I know. She's super nice.
No, I mean, no, not that I, you know, I've always liked doing comedy, and I always felt like this is something I could be good at, but especially when you're just starting off, it was like, you know.
Yeah.
Very touch and go.
So you were attracted to comedy at a young age?
Yeah. I think being funny is just the first thing I ever liked about myself. Like, you know, when for girls in middle school for girls is like the worst time to be alive. and I was like friends with the popular girls for some reason, which was just a horrible choice I made. And it wasn't because I like fit in with them or was one of them, but like I could hang with these people because I was funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, like the guys didn't want anything to do with me.
Right.
Like, nothing like that. But so it was sort of like it became the only thing about myself that I was like, well, I like this. Like I can be funny.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the sad start
of
my comedy career.
Right.
Most of us needing approval,
sure,
attention,
yeah,
on some level. So
and so like
here I am at UCB.
Were you doing any kind of theater or performance in middle school?
Yeah,
or?
I did. Well, I always did like dance, which I feel like I wasted a lot of time taking dance classes. Not because I was good at it, but because that's just what my mom signed me up for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then finally I wasn't very good at it. But finally in high school, I was like, actually, I'm going to do theater. And I started doing, the first show I did was a show called Showcase, where the seniors get to direct any scene of their choice or like any, they were like, some of them were sketches where we reenacted the song, like the title song from the South Park movie.
Okay.
And I got cast as Mrs. Cartman. Like,
sure.
To, like, come out and be like, Quiet Mountain Town. Like, that was it, but it was, like, a big hit. And I was like, oh, my God, yes, I love this. so then I did a bunch of, like, musicals and did Godspell, did Les Mis.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Heard of it?
Nope.
Vaguely.
Yeah. But I would always play the comedic role because I can sing.
So who were you in Les Mis? Were you the wife?
I was Madame Thénardier,
Yeah.
I was Helena Bonham Carter.
Uh-huh. The Master of the House.
Master of the
song,
House,
right?
Song. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My high school theater director once pulled me aside and told me I was a moderate triple threat, which I was like, moderately,
what?
Yeah, moderately good at dancing, moderately good at acting, and like moderately good at singing.
So you're like a triple concern.
And he meant that as like an encouragement. Like you can like
You can get by in
you
a number of ways.
You can get by on all three of these things, and some people can only get by on two, you know, or yeah. like some people can't dance at all. So, you know, work that. And so I just get like the funny roles, the, you know, supporting roles, which I was happy with. That was, you know, all I ever wanted to play, really. Uh-huh. Except for Eponine. I wanted Eponine, but
sure.
Emily Jackson had the voice of an angel.
Goddamn
so
Emily
it.
Jackson. Yeah. What podcast is she on right now?
Yeah,
I don't
right.
know.
She yeah, where's she?
She's too busy making music videos.
Yeah.
She
is that right?
Makes me. Yeah, she's got really very good voice. Look her up. Google her. Google her. Seriously, okay. Great voice.
Not now though. Listen to the podcast first. Pay
you're
attention.
Done.
Mm-hmm. I always wanted the Javert role.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Never.
Were you upset with Russell for destroying it?
I was. Yeah. No, I actually haven't seen the movie. So let the record reflect that all my knowledge about this musical is from the musical, because that's the kind of well-rounded
don't
individual
see the
I
movie
am.
If that's your favorite role.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Does he destroy it?
He does not do a good job. Ugh,
terrible. Well,
Russell,
I'll,
I know you're listening.
I'll do it in the sequel.
Yeah, perfect.
Russell's big into long-form improv.
Yeah.
He loves blogs it. About it. He's got an improv blog.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, he's into like tag outs versus walk-ons.
What
and stuff.
A nerd.
Yeah, he's an asshole.
Yeah, not a big fan of Swinging Doors, unfortunately.
Nope.
You know?
The Insider was based on his blog because he tried to sell out someone who, I don't even know. Okay, so I don't know how to finish that.
He is supposed to be playing Bill Hicks in a movie.
Oh, really?
Bill Hicks biopic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I know. I had the same reaction. I know.
Hey, Laura, were your friends funny in high school? Did you have like a funny group?
Yeah. Yeah, they were funny. None of them are performers. Like, none of them had like such a desperate need to make people laugh.
Yeah.
But they were all, yeah, like everyone was funny. The my best friends who I'm still close with are all funny people who love comedy and love just being ridiculous, basically.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. They're not... It wasn't. I mean, I had like my theater friends too, but and then in college, I started doing sketch comedy.
Which college?
And met Tufts University in Boston.
See, yes. Uh-huh. Powderhouse Boulevard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
I lived in Boston.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was going to ask, why do you know that?
I memorized the main avenues of all major universities.
Yeah. Well, that's.
It's handy in improv scenes to make somebody gasp.
Yeah, it's very.
Head out to Thayer Street near Brown. Yeah,
you
or whatever.
Know me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did more theater there. More. Musical theater and sketch.
At this point, was it? Oh, I'm sorry.
Too afraid to do improv.
Why?
I'll tell you why. Because my high school had an improv troupe called Artificially Flavored that I wanted to be in. Uh-huh. And I don't think they really knew what they were doing. I'd seen them. I know of like two performances they ever did, but they were holding auditions. And the way they held the auditions was everyone stood in a big circle and there was like 20 of us. Mm-hmm. And you just step in the middle and be funny. Which,
what?
Yeah. And which is terrifying.
Yeah. I couldn't
and
do also, that now.
Yeah.
Forever.
And you know, then you like tag people out. And that was how they were like, just do something. Just step in the middle and do like something funny was how they... you know, coached us in improv.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so I stepped out and tried to make my scene partner be a cow that I was cow tipping because I was like, what's funnier than cow tipping? And it didn't go well. It really bombed and I did not get on the team. And I was like, oh, I can't do improv. I'm bad at improv because doing improv is just spontaneously being funny.
Yeah.
And that was too much pressure for me. So my college did have a short form improv group called Cheap Socks, which I loved them.
Yeah.
And actually was like in love with the guy who ran it for like 2 years.
Yeah.
But I couldn't bring myself to audition.
Wow.
I was too scared.
So what got you here to UCB?
Well, I did sketch in college, and like doing that, I was like, oh, I found my people and I love doing this and I liked doing it more than regular theater. Mm-hmm. Like regular theater, it's like it takes itself so seriously sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I felt like you'd waste so much time in rehearsals, like doing these dumb exercises, like viewpointing, which is just like walking around the space, like moving weird. And like, I don't even know what the point is. Like, I felt it was just like it took itself very seriously. And I was like, I just do this for fun. And then joined the sketch comedy group, and it was just like a bunch of like people. We would just do bits with each other all the time. Mm-hmm. And everyone loved comedy, and we didn't take ourselves that seriously, we probably took ourselves a little seriously. Like, we took our comedy and our shows very seriously. But, yeah, you know, we just, like, we were direct. Like, we didn't have a director. It was just, like, us figuring out how to decide what sketches to do and what was funny and who's getting cast and what. And it was, I don't know, it was deeply satisfying.
Were you writing sketches as well then?
I mostly just acted. I, again, was still a little bit of a wuss, and I would try to write, and if it wasn't, I'm like type A perfectionist, and if it's not like amazing in the first two lines, I'm just like, I can't do this. Right. I did not write as much as I should have. Mm-hmm. Oh
boy.
What a weenie.
I had very
weenie.
Similar experiences in college.
Yeah, I still do, like, my whole life and today.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, the more I look back on it, the more I'm like, oh, I blew it.
Yeah.
Well, I've been meaning to talk to you about that, Sean. I feel the same way.
Oh, Dad.
Dad.
Could have been a lawyer.
I know.
Instead, you're doing this bullshit.
Yeah, I finally
it's okay.
Was like...
Debt is interesting.
Dad is... Yeah, do you guys want to talk about your dads instead?
No, yeah.
Okay. Did you say debt is interesting? Or?
Debt is interesting.
Oh, debt is interesting. Yeah, debt's great.
Hey, I'm almost out of it.
Yay!
Anyway, so... So you were doing sketch in college, and like, oh, this feels much more comfortable to me, much more interesting.
Because... Yeah. Comedy is more fun than drama, right?
Yeah, I think
and
so.
Musicals.
Well, you know.
But yeah. I was in LA the summer between my junior and senior year, and I went to the ASCAT to see an ASCAT show there, and they're doing like Women's Month, and so it was like all the I think like at least every ASCAT was all female. Mm-hmm. And it was a group called, or maybe just for the sake of this, they came together and called themselves Motherfucker. And it was like eight women. And I know Casey Wilson was one of them, but I honestly don't know who the other women were.
Right.
One of them was like 8 months pregnant. Like, she was about to have a baby. And it was the best. I'd seen improv, but this was the best improv show I'd ever seen. Like, the pregnant woman played like a gorilla jerking himself off. It was earned. It was grounded. It was good. But you like forgot she was pregnant. They were having so much fun. And I remember watching that and I was like, I gotta do this. Like, I gotta try to do this. And so... as soon as I grew up around here, so I knew when I graduated I was going to move back here. So I was like, I gotta take an improv class as soon as I graduate. Like, I know I would really like this, and I need to not be a wussy anymore.
Okay.
But actually, the first time I ever came to UCB
in New York.
Yeah, here, because I grew up in Montclair, New Jersey, which is like
12
miles.
I went to school
away.
In Montclair,
yeah,
New
very
Jersey.
Close by.
I did improv in Montclair for a number of years.
Nice.
Yeah.
What
wasn't my wishes?
oh God!
I went to Montclair State University and,
first,
and
at least,
formed, helped co-found an improv group called Possible Side Effects out there.
Joined and you guys in high school.
Maybe, yeah. And we used to do shows. We did shows at Cafe Eclectic every
Eclectic.
Other Wednesday, and we did a Saturday night
Cafe
show
Eclectic
at 12
Eclectic is
miles
on
west.
Beacon Avenue.
No,
nope, it's on. Bellevue.
It's on Bloomfield
Avenue.
And
right.
Oopsie.
That's right.
It's closed. It's now in Edible Arrangements.
No.
That's right.
Yeah, I had the same reaction.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God. This was like one of those first cafes where they have like a bunch of like random vintage couches you can sit on.
It was great.
Like open mics for performers. Like, they were the first
Cafe
to do
Eclectic
that.
Is a pretty on the nose name
right,
for that
exactly.
sort of place.
It's exactly what Cafe Eclectic sounds like.
But it was great.
Like it
and we did.
Sounds an Edible Arrangements.
Yeah, it's fucking bullshit. And we did a show every Saturday night at 12 Miles West.
Oh, cool.
Every Saturday at 10 or 11 or something.
Well, that'll teach you to respect the free market, John.
Yeah.
Never.
Capitalism isn't bad.
I won't join you.
Some people don't mind making money.
Well, when I was a junior in high school, I went to my boyfriend was a senior.
Oh,
hello.
Hey-o. And so they had, after his senior prom, we just like had a limo and nowhere to go. So we were like, let's take it into the city. And someone was like, let's go to this place called the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater and we'll see a comedy show. So my first show at UCB, and I want to say it was a Respecto Montalban show, but I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
But we came in, we took a limo into the city, we pulled up in front of UCB in a limo and in our prom dresses and
26th
tuxes.
Street?
Yeah.
Okay.
Got out and came in late to a improv show, and that was the first time I ever.
Do you remember anything from it?
I don't remember. I just remember loving it and being embarrassed that I was wearing a prom dress and that we'd like come in late.
What night was it? You remember?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I know. I think it was like a random weeknight. I want to say it was like a Wednesday or something. So, and this would have been in 2003.
Okay.
Theater just opened on 26th Street then.
Yeah. So that was my first time at UCB.
Okay.
And I've never gone back in a prom dress. Maybe I
should. So when you started taking improv classes here, did you still feel that trepidation and insecurity that you felt while you were trying to tip a cow over?
Yes. Uh-huh. I mean, yeah, I think like the first day, I mean, I remember I stupidly wore a gray t-shirt and had just the pit stains were like down all the way to the bottom of the shirt. I was just sweating so profusely. Uh-huh. I was really nervous, but realizing that there was, I knew enough about long form to know that there was like actually some structure to it and that I wanted to learn what that was. I was really excited. Mm-hmm. I was terrified, but I was really excited. Mm-hmm. I do remember going to my first show, getting on the subway, and I never like got stage fright before. I always get adrenaline, but never like stage fright. And this, I wanted to get off the subway and like cross the platform and go back uptown. Like I didn't. I was so scared. Like my body was like, "Why? Where are you going? Why are you doing this?" Mm-hmm. But then like stepping on stage for that first 101 show, I think we had like a decent audience for it too. It was just like it was so much fun. And my memory was a great show.
Right.
So I don't need to know if that was the reality. I don't need to see tape or video, but I remember it being, we had a fun time.
Heaven help any of us if we had to watch videos of our 101 show.
In my memory, it was great. But yeah, man, I've been obsessed with it ever since.
Is that true? Were you like obsessed pretty early and it locked in? Were you like, I want to do this?
Yes.
Because some people, it's sort of a more gradual thing.
No, it was instant. I took classes, like as soon as I finished one, I took the next one. Mm-hmm. It was like, I wanted to get good as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. You were friends with Sean Diston. I think he's similarly like, can't do anything halfway.
Yes.
Like he's like obsessed in that
way. Yeah, we connected on that level.
Yeah.
We were like, we should be the best at this already. I've taken 3 classes, so we should be on a Harold team. That's kind of...
Was there anything that you were like thinking of doing with this when you started taking classes? Or
I was on a track to become like a producer. I was working as assistant to a filmmaker, sort of like producing TV, and I was like, okay, well I'll be a producer because that's like a good practical life and career choice to make, and I'll just always do improv on the side, like at night I'll do my shows and that'll be a great fulfilling life. Mm-hmm. Which I quickly realized I hate producing. It's just the non-creative organizational thankless horrible part of
finding locations and calling people and scheduling and somebody else gets to think of the fun stuff and then you have to do the work to make it happen.
Right
exactly. It was it's terrible. So it took me a very long time to admit to myself that this is actually what I want to do for a career. That was like a very hard
thing to
admit. I don't think getting on a Harold team helped make me realize like, okay, maybe I can do this. So, and that was in 2010. I graduated college in 2008. So I don't think it was like really till like 2011 I was like, I'm gonna try to do this like for real.
Okay.
Not just keep calling it a hobby when it's the only thing I enjoy doing in my life.
Did your work ethic change at all when you made that decision? How did that affect your habits and behavior, if at all?
I don't know. I've always taken doing improv very seriously. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Did you start writing more or auditioning more or think that you wanted to do those kinds of things?
Yeah, I did start writing more. I did start taking improv more seriously, which probably made me a worse improviser. I think like, I definitely had all of the opera was my first Harold team. And I think all of the opera had first Harold team syndrome where we were like, okay, in our first show, we're going to redefine the Herald.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no. You
guys were all really good, and I think like you were the most obvious heavy hitters, so probably the pressure was on you to try to earn that maybe
so
in a way.
Like you, Opus, oh, here Dawn, we go.
Michael Caine, Elena, Mujan, McNulty.
And Nate Russell.
And Nate Russell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a lot of like good, solid improvisers.
It's a good team. We really got along as people. I love them. And our shows were just never as good as they should have been. I mean, like, not that...
They weren't bad either. They were good shows.
Yeah.
There were some. There were some that were like our... infamous to us, at least, is our roast beef. Our suggestion we got was roast beef curtains.
Oh,
yeah.
Which is disgusting. Gross.
Yeah.
And I think Don had gotten the suggestion for that, and he was like, "You want to see a roast beef curtain, Harold? You got it." And that was like kind of our attitude. We were all like, "Yeah, fuck you."
Yeah.
And we like just, it was the craziest show. But we did honor, it was pretty blue. We did honor that suggestion in our defense.
I remember that for being real gutsy and like, scared of nothing.
Yeah, a lot of shirts getting taken off. There was a scene where like all the guys had taken their shirt off, and then Elena took her shirt off, and then so it's sort of like, okay, are the girls gonna take their shirt off? And my parents and my grandmother were and I could literally like feel the end. Like normal, I guess I don't know if I would have. It probably depends on like what bra I was wearing too. It was like some good coverage, maybe. But I could just like feel from them. My mom told me like she was just going, please don't, no, don't. And I was like, I was getting that from you. It was like radiating from the audience.
So sure.
I didn't, but I felt like I said no to Elena. You know, I feel like I didn't heighten her.
I think you did the right thing.
Her taking her shirt off move.
Yeah.
But yes, lots of ballsy stuff.
Do you get a sense of any kind of reason why the shows weren't as good as they could have
been?
Yeah,
we were terrified. I do think there's like a first Herald team syndrome where you're just like the pressure of Herald Night is it's not like the pressure of doing a good show at the Creek. It's, you know, you're getting graded. You want so badly for Anthony King to come backstage and tell you he loves you and everything's going to be okay. It's never going to happen.
I think we're just very competition. I've heard this from people, and this rings true.
Yeah.
That, like, some people were picked to be in a team, lots of good people weren't, and they're watching.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
they're
sure.
your friends, and they're people that you liked and played with, and you kind of feel like, well, I better be good.
I better go prove that I actually deserve to be
here. Like, I better show my stuff to them.
Yes. Absolutely.
And they know better than anybody what's good and bad about you in a way. I think that's really hard.
That whole like pressure from the administration thing is so fucking terrible. And I say that as somebody who upholds the system.
Yeah, but it's just the way. I think the competition's good. I think the
competition
think it's
is good. Yeah.
If you can get out of your head and get over that, it'll make you such a better performer.
Yeah. And I guess that is the challenge, is like you can't control the fact that that exists. You can't control the fact that like this system exists, this competition exists. What you can control is how you're going to react to it.
Right.
You know? So it's like, you know, it's out there. So be better than it.
If I felt like it took me like a solid year, I felt like I was doing good improv, and that got me, like, I was on a warpath because Porter Mason didn't pass me from 401, which was the class where I met Lauren and like Sean. Everyone at Boys Club for Men passed but me.
Yeah.
And I was like on a warpath.
Right.
And I was like, I am good enough to pass 401, you jerk. And so I think that helped me. I think that like mentality, because then I wasn't afraid. Like, you're not thinking about being scared, you're thinking about like,
fuck Porter Mason.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I'm going to prove him wrong. Yeah. Which
often a good motivator.
Yeah, it is.
Porter Mason, the anger towards Porter Mason has launched 1,000 ships.
Oh yeah, Porter, you jerk. When I got on a team, he like emailed me. Was like, remember, I put you there, and I can take it away, or something like that. I was like, it's so true.
That's so funny. He probably wasn't even living in New York City when he sent that.
No, I don't think he was. And I was like, true that. But so I had this like fire that helped me get on a team, and then as soon as I like got on the team, that just dissolved into a puff of smoke. Dissolve into smoke. That's not a thing.
That's all right. It is now.
And then I was just like, and very in my head, and I think other people in the opera were too. So, you know, but I feel like we all got through that and are probably stronger because of that. I mean, that's what the entertainment industry is it's highly competitive and people are judging you and, you know. So.
A lot of factors are out of your control that affect people's perception of you that is you can't do anything about.
Yeah.
Pit stains all around.
Pit stains, big pit stains. And the Tuesday night toots, you know, where you have to poop before a show.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's an Opus Moreschi. Obviously, I could never come up with his, you know. That's why he's the head writer of Colbert Report.
That's Tuesday night toots Tuesday is night the kind toots. Of quality writing that Colbert needs.
Yeah.
That's, we're renaming Harold Knight to the Tuesday night toots.
Yeah.
Everyone calls it that anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's do a little speed round. I'm going to say something, Lauren. You just tell me about it. Captain Hippo. What's Captain Hippo?
Oh, Captain Hippo. These are a group of guys, funny guys. Yep. Andrew Ford, Mike Antonucci, Dan Levine, and Steve Levine, who are twins.
Yes.
Mm. And I worked with them at Landline TV, and they are kind of like a production company sketch group. They make funny, funny videos, and I've worked with them a lot. And they're also just friends of mine.
Friends of yours, so. And you met them at work.
Yeah.
Outside of work, and you do stuff.
Yeah.
You were just in a funny video they did with the bad pickup lines.
Bad pickup lines, yeah. That's just something. We were at a party together, and instead of talking to anyone else at this party, we just stood in a corner doing these like weird pickup lines to each other. And Don was there too, Don Finelli. We didn't make any new friends or meet anyone, but we made ourselves laugh for an hour and a half or 2 hours, and we're like, "Oh, let's film this."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
made a video.
That's
true. How comedy's born.
What would you say? Let's improv advice. Let's say a student comes up who's in 401 and says, "Hey, I can't get out of my head. How do I get out of my head?"
Oh boy, I think the best way to I would say go do a show with some people, with like friends and people you enjoy performing with. Where your only goal is to, like, make each other laugh. Like, go fuck with each other. Try to, like, have a good time. 'Cause it'll probably be a decent improv show. Like, my favorite shows I've ever done are maybe not necessarily technically good improv.
Yeah.
But if we're all having a good time and, like, struggling not to break.
Yeah.
Probably the audience is, too.
Yeah.
I know some people are like really anti-breaking. I know sometimes it can take away from the reality and the groundedness of the scene.
Yeah.
But sometimes if the performer's breaking, it's because whatever's that happening
can be
is
irresistible,
really funny.
Yeah.
I would say like go do a show with friends and the only goal is to just have fun and be as silly as possible and it doesn't need to be good. Other than that.
What do you say if somebody, I got another one for you. Let's say a student and it's, yeah, whatever your answer is. What if someone says, oh, I feel like I'm bad at game and people say I have to get better at game. What do you think I should do with that? 401.
Now you're like quizzing me on my ability to teach improv.
Oh, I don't mean that. I mean more like
this
advice.
This is your job.
How would you talk to them like improviser to someone who loves it?
I got a note. I remember this is a note I got in 401 was, I guess it was Goddamn Porter.
Porter, you know
what the game is, or maybe you think you know what the game is, but you're not communicating it. Like, just state it. Just say it out loud. If you think you know what it is, just even if it's awkward, like, say it in a sentence.
That's good.
It'll just make it very clear for everybody. It feels awkward to do. It's hard.
Yes, I agree. It's you don't realize how coy you're being, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
How about Very Good Kiss? Let's talk about Very Good Kiss. Your second team.
Mm-hmm. Great team. That was a team of like half the opera and half Robert Barron, where I know two teams that had maybe like a rocky road of it sometimes.
Yeah.
Rocky Road ice cream.
Yeah, that's a thing. Yeah.
It's weird. Mm-hmm. my mind literally was like, yum. Yummy.
Yeah.
The team changed a lot, but the first iteration was me, Nate Russell, Opus, Johnny McNulty, and then Dan Klein, Jameson Guest, Tracy Wickfield, and Arthur Meyer. So like a lot of fun, silly people.
Yeah.
And before our first show, before our first Herald together, I think it was Dan Klein who was like, hey guys, remember how like in our 501 class shows it'd always be fun and like we'd probably be pretty good in them? Like, let's have a great 501 class show out there. And then we went out and like did a nice, simple, good Herald. And it was like, that was refreshing.
Yeah,
sure.
And we kind of like didn't put as much pressure on ourselves. This was like second team now. We all learned from like freaking out that doesn't lead to good improv. So, the team was a lot of fun. We just had a good time.
Mm-hmm. And you were able to play with a little bit more confidence on that team.
Yeah, I feel like it's like, you know.
Was there something to being like kept on Harold Knight or kept on a Harold team that was like, oh, okay, well, yeah, maybe I'm like.
I think so. It's like a fresh start. I remember when the opera got broken up in that mix up. I don't think many people got cut. I think people just kind of got jumbled around. Right. I did like I weep uncontrollably when I found out the opera had been broken up, because it's like just that first team. You're like, what? This is my family. I'm going to die. But yeah, the second team, I think it was like a nice fresh start. We can approach Harold Knight and doing Harold with a new attitude. And we did it in a way that was like, let's like relax and just have a good, simple Harold, have fun. We like doing this. And that led to better stuff, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have a preference of, this is, I don't know, maybe a weird question. Do you have a preference between Time Dash second beats and Analogous second beats?
I love questions that are this nerdy.
Ooh.
Say it again.
Do you have a preference between Time Dash second beats and Analogous second beats? And I'll tell you, I have a bit of an agenda here.
Okay.
Because
I love this question that you have an opinion and that we're going to talk about it.
I feel like I have seen, here's Mr. You know, Big Shot, who barely knows anything, running his mouth right now. But
sure.
I feel like I have seen too many Time Dash second beats.
Now, before you continue that, let's hear Laura's answer, then come back to you for that.
I do think a good Analogous second beat is really, it's like, that's harder. And probably, if you do a good one, it's probably like, feels really good. You're like, I did something smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, yeah, those are probably my favorite. Bucky's been doing monocene Harolds now for a while, and so.
Which, by the way, are great.
Which has been so fun.
They're really great.
They're so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
Feels very different in a really good way. So a lot of the times we're still the same characters in the same
place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. I don't know. Is that Time Dash? I guess.
It's harder to do Analogous.
Yeah, it's harder to do an Analogous.
Yeah, the
it's happened, though, organically out of second beats.
You could theoretically have like an apartment lobby and two mailmen show up. They leave and then like two FedEx guys show up and they're whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had our first one that happened where in the first beat, I was like a bitchy teenager and Matt Cutler was my friend who was like, overweight and crying and sorry for herself.
A perfect Matt Cutler character.
Yeah. And then out of the first beat, Nate Russell was an employee at this Gap we were at, and then he started crying because he got fired, and then I came in as like another employee of the Gap, and it was so that was Analogous. And that just kind of happened magically.
Which
did
you just say which one you like better? Have you answered the question? I'm sorry.
I think so.
You said Analogous.
Yeah, okay. Analogous, sure.
Mm-hmm. I know, John, what's your agenda?
All right, what's your agenda here?
Well,
what
I mean, it's just that I feel like, you know, I don't go to Harold Knight every week, but I'm trying to go more often, and I see more Time Dash second beats and third beats than I do Analogous second beats, and a good Time Dash second beat is just as good as a good Analogous second beat. But what I am seeing a lot of is the kinds of things that we warn people about when we teach Time Dash second beats is like, don't make it 15 minutes later.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or don't make it a Time Dash that follows.
Yeah. Plot. Don't pick up where the first scene left off.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You don't pick up where the scene.
Delaney's got a phrase. Okay. You go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Don't pick up where the scene left off. Pick up where the game left off. Right. Is that what he says?
Oh, he might. The one he told me was start at the moment of discovery again.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm missing.
What I used to say, which is not great, is like, don't start where the first beat ends. Start where it starts. Just to get you away from trying to continue it. But that doesn't work because then you end up just sort of like parroting all the same lines in kind of an empty-headed way.
Yeah.
And I talked to Delaney about it. He was like, no, you start where the moment of discovery was. Because first beat, like, there's going to be some figuring out what's up. And then there's a moment where you're like, oh, this is what it is.
Right.
Kind of start there in the second beat.
Yeah. And I, you know.
Or start with that in mind, you know, in kind of a Delaneyism sort of. He never gives a hard and fast rule, so I don't want to misquote him. But
so I wonder if people are thinking enough about Analogous second beats, you know, or
do you think they're scared of the game and they're just playing plot because they don't know what the fuck's going on?
I don't really know.
I will say the thing. I haven't taken a class in a while, so I've stopped thinking about second beats in terms of like Time Dash or Analogous. So maybe this isn't useful to students. But the thing that helped me with second beats that made them seem less hard was when I don't remember who. I think like a coach said this, and I don't remember who.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
But they were like, the second beat can just be like you take whatever's fun from the first beat, and now you bring it to like you expand that world and you like see it in this new heightened way. Mm-hmm. And so I try to think of second
just
beats
what's
as
fun.
Just like what was fun.
Yeah, no,
hopefully
that's a great way
it's
to do
like
it.
The game.
Yeah,
no, that
yeah. that is what the game is. It's yeah. what's fun about the scene.
Yeah, and so where do you want to see it? Is it, you know, in an analogous scenario? Is
yeah,
it
it's
just
the perfect
like,
way to think about it. Yeah. What's yes. fun and what serves that best?
Right.
Yeah, it's just like expand.
I think that's what
that
Besser
world.
Says. Like, what's another funny situation for this?
Yeah. And yeah. it's not like, well, what's the logical progression from this scene to the next scene? Or like, what are these characters going to do in the second beat? It's what's funny and how else can we
right.
play it?
What else do we want to see this character doing or
right.
this weird how else would this weird behavior what would it be like in some other situation yeah just kind of breaking it down to what's fun
right yeah exactly I think that's
how I have to think about it
that's how I think about it too is yeah and that's what I tell people when I teach is like it's just or when I coach I say like it's you know what it's what's funny about the scene and what was funny to you about that scene
yeah
you know. Do you have an opinion
to be
on this?
Fun and funny.
Yeah,
I do. I do have an opinion. I it's funny because I feel like I notice more. There are people who can only do analogous beats and they can't do time dashes. They can only come out and present. They're like kind of like sketch writer-y type
yeah.
improvisers where they're like they're all premise and so all they can think about is like, well, it's a mailman who's like mad at the baker, so I'm gonna make it. Two other occupations that are mad at each other, and they're not even able to connect to the acting side of it at all.
Yeah.
And that stands out to me more. That stands out to me more like stand and talk
right.
improv that's kind of lame.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I know what you mean. If someone's doing a time dash because they're not even if they're just continuing the scene story-wise, it's lazy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think what Laura said is right. What's fun and do that again. So if it's like a great character,
yeah,
you kind of want to do a time dash because we want to see that
right.
character as much as the same way.
Yeah.
You know, so like.
Totally. And
if it's more just like a, if it's like the scene Laura described where it's even, well, that's interesting because Cutler's character was probably funny, but it's another person who's acting
it's
the same way.
It's getting to see that behavior now, but
the fun
between.
Part was his kind of like probably sad, self-hating desperation.
I was like, oh, shut up. Like, it was kind of
like
the,
mean girl and like pathetic ally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like whatever. Yeah. I don't know. I can't teach improv anymore. I thought about it too much and my brain broke. So
right.
I don't know. But like.
Brain broke.
Yeah. In class, I feel like I notice more the people who only initiate analogous because I feel like you're not listening. You're writing in your head. You can't wait to come out there and propose your idea, and you're going to be shut down to whatever your partner's doing. I guess I notice that more.
And I notice when people – when I see mostly time dash second beat initiations because I'm noticing that they're like those kinds of like 15 minutes later time dashes, usually 15 minutes forward. Kinds of time dashes.
Yeah, those aren't good.
Know.
I agree.
What kind of an initiator are you, do you think? Do you initiate premise or half idea or character? Like, what do you think when you step out to do a scene?
Yeah, I think usually premise. I like pulling premise, but I do try to have make like a character choice within that. Or definitely if I'm responding like I'm not the initiator I try to respond with like a strong character choice. I've actually found that doing these monoscene heralds have made that like somehow it's made all of us much better at just starting a scene off with really strong character games. I don't know why, but I think because like we need to create a world, so we like have to make a big decision about like, we know where we are, so now all we have to do is, like, be a character that would be at this coffee shop or at this Gap. And so it's really easy to, like, come out and initiate with, like, a strong character game.
It's kind of like a genre thing. Like, if you're playing, like,
exactly.
a sassy 50s diner waitress who wants to get out of this town, you can instantly think of, like, five of the people who would be suited for that.
Right, exactly.
Or if you're, like, a mean girl type of high school person, you can imagine... it's easy to flesh that out.
Right. The kind of girl who's like hanging out at the Gap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Or, yeah. The specificity of the location really helps with that. So I've been noticing that recently. I'm like, wow, we have like, we're doing good character work. We like have it in the first few
lines. I
think
monoscenes encourage that.
Yeah, they do. And I didn't realize that until we started doing it.
Yeah, you. I love Harold Knight in general. I feel like is being a lot more experimental as a rule. People are trying stuff.
I think that's
really
great.
Fun.
Yeah, I'm
with Lloyd Knight. Is Lloyd Knight directed? John, tell me if I'm wrong. Is Lloyd Knight directed to stick a little bit more to like textbook Harolds?
Well,
used to be true.
It used to be because we used to have them do strictly pattern game openings, and we just last month or a couple months ago lifted that part of it.
Okay,
so that groups can do whatever they want because we were seeing.
Some people just aren't suited to do that.
And it's just also the Lloyd teams have been together enough at this point to start injecting their own voice and their own, like, what they think is funny. Whereas the pattern game, we were noticing as we were watching Lloyd teams that it was kind of.
It makes a certain kind of Harold,
It just felt like people, you know, if you don't.
So there's no real distinction between Lloyd and Harold anymore in terms of their mission?
Well.
I don't
think so. I mean, the goal at the end of the day is to do great Harolds.
Yeah.
You know? And
yeah.
for Lloyd Knight, it's like the same thing as like, you know, in AAA baseball, you still have to go out and like hit home runs and like be good infielders and outfielders and play your positions well and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I feel like Harold Knight's got a lot of vets on it. I feel like when the Op performed was sort of like, it was like a lot of new people at that time.
Yeah, it was like 22 new people.
It went from 10 teams to 8, and there was kind of a lot of bloodletting, and a lot of new people got let in, and people got broken up, and there was sort of like a changeover.
Yeah.
So I think there was just new people, really good people, but they were new to Harold Knight. And now I feel like it's like, cocky sons of bitches who like they don't give a shit and they're like coming out. Yeah, it's fun. I think there's like a lot of swagger.
Ooh.
And the Chicago people who were like kind of IO stars who are here, like Adam Schwartz.
Yeah.
And then Klepper and Laura have been here long enough that they're straight up no messing around UCB vets also. But certainly they come in with all this
seasonedness.
You can see it.
Yeah.
You definitely can.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah,
it's like a ripening of the whole night in a way.
I feel like everyone's kind of kicking butt right now. It's fun to watch. And like every team has a pretty...
Or I'll say this. Even if they fail, they fail like with swagger or confidence. They fail like with like, well, this happens.
Right.
As opposed to like pit stain, nervous breakdown.
Right,
sort of
like just panic.
Yeah.
Like, can we even get through this?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a fun feeling.
Let's talk about Bellevue real quick. You're on a mod team, Bellevue.
Oh, yeah.
Are you a writer or an actor for
that? Just actor for that.
And this is your first mod team?
First mod team.
So you were not on Gramps.
I wasn't on Gramps.
Oh, boy.
I
did forget.
So you're on Bellevue and you're a writer.
Just actor.
Oh, actor, sorry.
So you're a writer on Bellevue.
Listening?
You're
a writer
on
Gramps.
Gramps.
And writing for Gramps has been really fun.
I'm the only one in the meetings.
We're doing a show at Roy Arias Studios tomorrow. You guys should come out.
So you're an actor on Bellevue.
Yes.
And do you find that that's like scratching all those itches of like doing sketch comedy that you love?
Yeah, I miss doing sketch comedy because I just did nothing but improv after college. So it's been fun to get back into that. And I mean, the writers have like 10 times more work than the actors do.
Yeah.
So I feel like we just have to show up and, you know,
they also
play
have all the control, though. I feel like they get to like pitch the. You're sort of at the mercy of these assholes.
Our Bellevue's like pretty collaborative. Like the actors usually come to the pitch meetings, and they will actually take actors' pitches. And like if we pitch a character, I've had characters that I've pitched be, you know, then I'll like collaborate. Like Glenn Buzan and I worked on a character that I pitched.
Is Glenn a writer?
She's a writer. Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What is your approach on Mod Night to pitching characters? What do you think like is the successful approach to doing that?
I don't know.
Be funny.
Right. It's just gotta be funny.
Right.
I don't know.
But how though?
Well,
you know? Because this is a tricky thing, I think.
Yeah.
How about this? Let's say you're going to a pitch meeting, you don't have any ideas, you're like, I'd like to bring something. What do you do in that instance?
Well, the beauty of a pitch meeting is you can have half an idea and like present it to the group. And there have been times Catherine Mudon came in with the pitch. She was like, she just wanted to play a Scotsman. And I think that was her entire pitch. Because I think she has like a great Scottish accent. And that's it. She just wanted to play a Scotsman. And that became the sketch where the Scotsman was like one of the popular girls.
Oh, yeah. I remember this.
He was hanging with the popular girls. Mm-hmm. And it was really fun.
Yeah.
I think it was a really strong sketch. Mm-hmm. And it just... All she pitched was, I have a Scottish accent, basically, that I can do.
But have there been instances where you've pitched characters that were like, you felt your pitch was like pretty successful? Or
yeah, well, I think if you, I mean, having like a strong sense of the character and then the character needs to have a game, just like in an improv scene. Mm-hmm. So I think those are the strongest ones where there's like a clear defined like character voice, you know, personality, persona. But then there's got to be a sketch to back them up, too. Mm-hmm. So... I pitched one that I actually used for my mod audition, which was Terry. She's like a sex therapist, and she's like she has her voice is kind of like, oh, hello there, like, and she's just propositioning a guy who works at Duane Reade, and she's trying to like invite him. She's trying to invite him home, and because she's a sex therapist, like she's privy to these crazy sex acts that you don't know exist. Like,
yeah.
Let me ask you this, Marcel. Have you ever pressed your genitalia up against a microwave and turned it on to high for 9 minutes? Like that, stuff like that. And that's right. One that I pitched. And then Glenn Buzan helped. She wrote most of it, actually. Like she took what I had started and ran with it.
So there's an attitude, there's a point of view, mm-hmm. and there's a context for the character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like... being in Duane Reade. Is right. Kevin back
I
on
thought
the
I
turret?
Saw my brother walk back out of the police station, but it's not him.
This time it just was your brother in cuffs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird world I live in. I hope that I'm conscious right now. There isn't a dream.
There's somebody there. There's a hand there.
Yeah, he's smoking a
looks
cig.
Looks like a Kevin Hines hand. All right, I think we might have to wrap this up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think so. Where can people see you, Laura?
At UCB. Come to Herald Night. And
yeah.
And Bellevue's up on March 11th at 9:30 on a Monday.
Bucky's your Herald team.
Bucky's
Bellevue's
my
your
Herald
mod
team.
Mm-hmm.
Bellevue's my mod team. That's right. I only do B teams.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Boys Club for Men.
Boys Club for Men. Mm-hmm.
The Bopra.
The Bopra.
Babcocks.
And Very Good Bits. Yeah.
Anything on the internet that you want to plug or promote?
Dude, the Pickup Lines video is
Pickup
Lines,
oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We're at like 20,000
views. Hey, how about
your
weed video?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Emily Axford and I made, we did like sort of a pilot with the Captain Hippo guy shot that is about two girls who fall into selling weed because they are lost in this big city and that grounds them.
What's the song that you guys sing in it? Weed Makes Me Feel
Free? Weed Sets Me Free.
Yeah.
Yeah. That we just posted the music video for that, and like that's just all the potheads on YouTube.
Love
it's
got, it.
It's doing
that's
well.
That's great.
Yeah.
So yeah.
All right.
Go
okay.
to YouTube.
Thank you, Laura.
Go to UCB Theater and YouTube.
Just,
that's where you can be seen.
Yeah.
Just go there and
I'll
wait for
there.
It to happen. Yeah.
Yep. So
I'll
UCB.
I'll show up eventually in one of those two things.
Yep. UCBtheater.com/YouTube.
Yeah, that's right.
That. Yep. That's it.
LauraYouTube.UCB/
Yeah.
Coptercam.
Yeah.
All right. I got nothing. Laura, thanks for being on this show.
Thank you so much, Laura.
Me.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Sypha.
Thank you, Keaton.
Thank you, Keaton.
Thank you, Semra.
Semra, thank you.
Thank you, Kevin Hines.
Thank you, Kevin Hines. Thank you, weird doppelganger Kevin Hines in the police station.
And thank you, Porter Mason.
Thank you, Porter Mason.
For everything.
For setting this in motion by violating every policy we have and picking up your wife. And then... and then scaring Laura Wilcox almost out of comedy.
Why is that every policy we have? Shouldn't we have some policies that deviate from just that kind of behavior?
No. Porter broke every policy.
Whatever.
He stopped teaching game. He did everything wrong in that class. He took one of the funniest people and told them not to continue.
Yeah. He stopped teaching game
he
in
went,
the service
he's a rogue,
of
people don't know. Porter Mason's a fucking rogue. He's violent. A sadistic sabotager.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gets off on it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a bad man.
He's evil.
But thank you for everything.
Okay, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
mass prisoner of all the pleasures of all.